Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Trademarks and Lawsuit Paranoia Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 9, 2013, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Already LLC v. Nike Incorporated. The case concerns a suit in which Nike alleges that certain of Already's athletic shoes infringe Nike's Air Force One trademark, and Already contends in response that the trademark is invalid. During the litigation, Nike issued a covenant stating that it would not assert any trademark or unfair competition claims against Already based on its existing footwear designs or future colorable imitations, and then sought dismissal of all claims with prejudice. Already resisted the dismissal, and the question here is whether Nike's unilateral covenant renders the case moot. In an opinion delivered by Chief Justice Roberts, the court held unanimously that application of the voluntary secession doctrine establishes that the case is moot. Justice Kennedy filed a concurring opinion, which was joined by Justices Thomas, Alito, and Sotomayor. To discuss the case, we have Christopher Newman, who is an assistant professor of law at George Mason University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Newman.
Hi, this is Chris Newman with George Mason University School of Law. I'm going to be discussing the Supreme Court's recent decision in Already LLC versus Nike, Inc. In this decision, written by Justice Roberts, the court addressed whether a trademark owner's covenant not to sue can render moot and thus deprive of federal jurisdiction a competitor's attempt to have the trademark declared invalid in federal court. In 2009, Nike sued rival shoemaker Already LLC in the Southern District of New York. Nike alleged that two of Already's shoe designs, called Sugar and Soldier Boy, infringed Nike's registered trademark in a shoe design called Air Force One. Already filed various counterclaims, one of which sought a declaration that the design of Air Force One was not a valid trademark. In the middle of discovery, Nike decided that the litigation wasn't worthwhile and presented Already with a covenant not to sue. In the covenant, Nike undertook unconditionally and irrevocably to refrain from making any claims or demands based on any of Already's current or previous shoe designs or any colorable imitations thereof. Nike then petitioned the court to dismiss both its own action and Already's pending counterclaims. Already objected to the dismissal of its counterclaims, but the district court held that the covenant had rendered them moot, and on appeal, the Second Circuit agreed. The mootness doctrine is an interpretation of Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution, which grants the judicial branch authority to adjudicate, quote, cases and controversies, unquote. Now, this phrase has been interpreted to mean that in order to have standing to press a claim in federal court, a litigant must have a personal injury that is both fairly traceable to the defendant's wrongful conduct and likely to be redressed by the requested relief. This actual controversy has to exist not only when the complaint is filed, but through all stages of the litigation. If at any point the issues presented are no longer live, so that the parties lack a legally cognizable interest in the outcome, then the case becomes moot and must be dismissed. Now, an obvious potential problem with this doctrine is the fear that a party might engage in unlawful conduct and then, when sued, stop just long enough to have the case declared moot, only to pick up again later where he left off. In the realm of trademarks and patents in particular, there's concern that an IP owner might use a mark or patent of dubious validity to threaten people and then evade attempts to contest validity by unilaterally disavowing any current intent to sue, and yet still manage to retain the ability to chill competitors' conduct because of the continued existence of the mark and the possibility of future claims. In response to concerns like this, the court has developed what it calls the voluntary cessation doctrine. This doctrine holds that in order to claim its own voluntary cessation of conduct has rendered a case moot, A party bears a heavy burden of showing that it's absolutely clear the behavior in question cannot reasonably be expected to recur. In this case, then, the behavior in question was Nike's assertion of its Air Force One trademark against Allready's shoe designs. The primary issue was thus whether Nike's covenant not to sue was broad enough to ensure that Allready could suffer no further injury from Nike's assertion of the mark. The Supreme Court agreed unanimously with the District Court and the Second Circuit that this covenant was broad enough to moot the case. The covenant is unconditional and irrevocable. It runs to Allready as well as to its distributors or customers, and it covers any claim or demand related to Nike's mark based on any of Allready's current or previous designs or any colorable imitations thereof. This use of the phrase colorable imitations was held to be significant here because in the lawsuit, Nike had taken the position that the Sugar and Soulja Boy designs were colorable imitations of Air Force One. The covenant now allows Allready to produce both of those designs as well as any colorable imitations of them, making it impossible to imagine any shoe design other than an exact counterfeit that Nike would be able to claim was infringing and yet outside the covenant. As Justice Roberts put it, the only shoe that Nike would be able to sue over at this point exists somewhere on the shelf between Dorothy's ruby slippers and Perseus's winged sandals. The court rejected Allready's argument that the mere continued existence of the contested trademark constituted an injury providing a basis for suit. Not only would this stretch standing doctrine beyond all bounds, it would result in competitors suing each other preemptively to invalidate marks simply for competitive advantage rather than to settle actual disputes. The court also rejected Allready's argument that it had standing because certain of its investors had indicated their unwillingness to invest in Allready unless Nike's mark was struck down. The court said that if it is absolutely clear, as they had held it was, that the challenged conduct cannot reasonably be expected to recur, then the mere fact that some people base decisions on unfounded conjecture does not give rise to the type of actual injury needed to establish Article III standing. While the decision was unanimous, Justice Kennedy filed a concurrence, joined by three other justices, to emphasize that in cases like this, there has to be a heavy burden on the trademark owner to show that it really is absolutely clear the business of the competitor and its supply network will not be disrupted or weakened by satellite litigation over things like mootness or any threats latent in the terms of the covenant itself. So the bottom line here is that it is possible to get a challenge to a mark's validity dismissed for mootness, but the price of doing so is to give a competitor absolute immunity from infringement claims based on that mark for anything the competitor is doing now or can reasonably anticipate doing in the future. Justice Roberts speculates that this line of defense is unlikely to be abused because it may be a risky long-term strategy for trademark holders who would need to worry that too much uncontrolled use of the mark may lead to loss of significance and ultimately cancellation. That's all for today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.